The Ethics Election and Open Government Subcommittee meeting will now come to order. Tamara, please call the roll.
Chair Fabricio.
Here.
Vice Chair Barnaby, excused. Democratic Ranking Member Arrington.
Here.
Representatives Beltran.
Here.
Bracy Davis.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Chaney.
Here.
Gant.
Here.
Griffiths, excused. Harris.
Here.
Holcomb, excused. Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Coster.
Here.
Porras.
Here.
Rizzo.
Here.
Robinson, excused. Tremont.
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Tamara. Please make sure cell phones and other communication devices, including laptops, are turned off or placed in silent mode. Members of our audience, thank you for being here today. Today, we will be hearing a presentation from the Secretary of State on the certification process for voting machines. The usual procedure in this subcommittee is that we do not take public testimony following presentations because presentations are generally for information, informing members of the committee itself on relevant issues. However, because some of you have traveled a great distance to be here today, I will allow a period of public testimony if time permits. Since allowing testimony in this circumstance is not standard practice, I want to advise members of the public to keep their comments brief and to the point. If you are part of a group, it would be helpful for time management if you have one person speak for the group. This is not a forum to speak about a specific bill or to conduct your own presentations or to question the members of the subcommittee or the secretary. The Secretary of State is here at my invitation, and I thank him for attending. Any comments that members of the public may have should be directed to the committee members and not to the secretary. If you do wish to speak, please fill out an appearance card and give it to one of the members of the staff here so that we could put you in the queue for presenting your message. Okay. So presentations. Members, please give your attention to the Secretary of State, Cord Byrd. Secretary Byrd, welcome and thank you for being here. You are recognized to begin your presentation.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman Fabricio, members of the committee. It's great to be back in the Florida House and to be with you all today. As Florida's Chief Elections Officer, I'm pleased to present to this committee an overview of the Florida Department of State's voter system certification. My presentation will detail the processes and standards for certifying voting systems, including the testing and examination of such systems. I hope my overview presents a clear picture of Florida's certification process so that members can make informed decisions on the law and facts. Joining me is Division of Elections Director Maria Matthews, and she will also be available to answer any questions. President Lincoln once said that we cannot have free elections or free government without elections. The best way to safeguard the right to vote is by ensuring integrity and transparency in our electoral process. These items are indispensable for building voter confidence and increasing voter participation. The twin pillars of elections are accuracy and timeliness. Since the 2020 election, Florida's legislature has taken more steps than any other state in the country to enhance election integrity and increase elections transparency. And I was happy to be a member of this body when we advanced most of those elections reforms. The last two general elections held in Florida were displays of what efficient and transparent election administration looks like. While other states had their results called into question, we could provide preliminary results to the public on election night. Although Florida sets the bar for election administration, we know we cannot rest on our laurels. We must be responsive to an ever-changing landscape to ensure that the integrity of every election is protected. This level of readiness and preparation does not happen overnight. Our success has been built on the foundation of a robust election code and over the last several years, and in fact, the last several decades. Florida has made more sensible reforms to our election code than any other state in the country. And if you don't believe me, there's a brand new article that just came out that I can make available to the committee, and it's titled, How Florida Fixed Its Vote Counting Problem, and it recounts what the state has done since 2000 and the reforms that we've made over the last two decades to make Florida the gold standard. And that's not just what I've said, that's what others say about what we're doing in Florida. The legislature has passed laws that include processes to ensure the integrity of our election system that must occur before, during, and after an election in each of Florida's 67 counties. The legislature has passed laws that include processes to ensure the integrity of Florida's voting election system. Section 101.5605 Florida statutes requires the Florida Department of State to, quote, examine all makes of electronic or electromechanical voting systems submitted to it and determine whether the systems comply with the requirements of 101.5606. These are our statutory requirements that we are obligated to follow. That means that no voting system in Florida can be used until it is tested and approved by the Florida Department of State. Certification is a technical process and therefore involves some technical terms that you will need to be familiar with, and I have them on this slide. So BVSC is the Bureau of Voting System Certification. It is authorized under Florida Statute 101.017 to provide technical support to the supervisors of elections and which is responsible for voting system standards and certification. Voting system. A voting system is a way to cast and count the choices a voter makes on a ballot. A voting system consists of four main parts. Number one, the election management system. This is where the election is made. It includes programming the election, creating ballots, and looking at test results to be sure they are accurate. Number two, the precinct count system. This refers to the part of the system that scans a ballot at a polling place and creates a tally from the voter's choices for each race on the ballot. Number three, the central count system. This refers to the part of the system that is like the precinct count system, but the process happens at a central facility, the supervisors of elections office. And number four, an accessible voting solution, such as a ballot marking device or a precinct scanner and electronic ballot delivery, which allows a voter to remotely receive and mark a ballot. FVSS is the Florida Voting System Standards. It is a document that serves as a guide to applicants seeking certification, an information source on Florida's requirements and evaluation methods. It sets forth the required minimum standards and procedures for testing, contains procedures for certifying compliance with the minimum standards. It is a complement to Florida statutes relevant to voting system certification. ITA is independent test authorities, entities accredited by the National Association of State Election Directors, or NASED, that can perform testing for compliance with the Federal Election Commission's voting system standards, and TDP, technical data package, procedures, manual supplies, and software to run the voting system. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of certification, I want to provide some background about the organizational structure of the Florida Department of State's Voting System Certification Administration. The Bureau of Voting System Certification is one of three bureaus within the Division of Elections. The division is led by Maria Matthews, and Bureau Chief Linda Hastings Ard oversees the certification process. Under the Bureau Chief are eight full-time FTE. You can see their titles there on this slide. FVSS voting system certification process. So now let's get to the certification process itself. You can see that there are several steps a vendor must go through to obtain a voting system certification. These steps are carried out in three stages. There's the application stage, the testing stage, and the final disposition stage. While it may appear complex, in practice, it is relatively straightforward. BVCS, closely with county supervisors of elections and certified vendors, learn about anomalies that could lead to more rigorous testing conditions. Application stage. The process begins with a submitted application. BVSC reviews the submissions for completion against Florida Voting System Standards requirements. If deficiencies are found in the application, the vendor has an opportunity to remedy those deficiencies. The submission must include a technical data package, the TDP, that includes an initial voting system setup. When a submission is complete, BVSC notifies the vendor, and the application process can proceed. An amended application after the testing stage restarts the process. So if the vendor makes an amendment after we find something that is not in compliance, then they have to start the process over. On this slide, you can see the detailed information we receive in the application process. This stage includes an intensive review of documentation to determine compliance with the FVSS. Here you can also see BFSC's responsibility in this stage. We acknowledge receipt of the application and provide initial documentation to the vendor. The checklist is used in our review and is also provided to the vendor so they know what is expected during the application review stage. Testing stage process. Once a vendor has cleared the application stage, the test stage begins. The first step involves the creation of a test plan that contains scope statement, specifications for tests to be conducted, election definition requirements, supplies and equipment, responsibility requirements, and pass-fail criteria. After the vendor has accepted the test plan, the voting system is then delivered to the BVSC. While BVSC awaits delivery of the voting system, preparations for testing are being made by our staff. Once all items are received and inventoried, the test phase can commence. Tests are a highly orchestrated process conducted at a mutually agreed upon facility. The facility must be open to the public, have adequate power, plenty of space, security, and availability. Each test is thoroughly cross-checked with the corresponding Florida voting system standards, Florida statutes, and federal authorities. To save time and resources, the two test phases, which you'll see near the bottom of the purple box and on the right-hand side of the slide, may be run concurrently. Phase one consists of a physical audit and functional audit. Mock elections are run and ballots counts are conducted. Phase two tests accessibility equipment, recounts, force, system failure, and recovery. So in pretty simple terms, we do everything we can to break the machines, unplug them while they're operating, put jams in them. We do everything we can to break them as part of the testing. While tests are in progress, BVSC reviews the voting system source code for security and other vulnerabilities. At the end of each round of testing, BVSC issues a test report indicating whether the voting system passed or failed. If a voting system fails at any point in a test phase, the vendor has the option to submit an amended application within 60 days. Testing stage responsibilities. On this slide, you can see the responsibility of both parties during the testing stage. The vendor must provide feedback and approval of BVSC's test plan, secure an appropriate test facility, provide any remaining equipment, supplies, election database files, and media required in the test plan, and provide a statement of equipment readiness. The Bureau creates the test plan, prepares for the test. This includes a project schedule, test scripts, election codes, expected results, testing form, supplies, and equipment inventory. It issues test results, assessments of results, investigation of unexpected results, a pass-fail recommendation, report write-up, and then procedures phase test report includes the pass-fail outcome and details of voting system deficiencies. In the case of current phase testing, one report will be issued. Final disposition stage. If the phase one and phase two test reports find noncompliance and the vendor does not submit an amended application within 60 days, BVSC denies certification. The vendor may request a written report of the final reasons for denial. BVSC is required to provide the report within 30 days of the vendor's request. If the voting system passes, which means it complies with Florida voting system standards and other relevant statutes, rules, and authorities, BVSC creates a test report within 10 work days of completed testing. This report will contain an overview of how the tests were conducted, final test results, and the Division of Elections findings. It is at this point the vendor submits the entire software and firmware package in the final format that it will be distributed by the division to Florida counties who acquire the voting system. So if a system is certified, and before it goes out into the field to the supervisors, before they can purchase it and start using it, the software and firmware is sent to the division for us to look at it, review it, to make sure it's compliant before it then goes out to the counties. In the final step, the Department of State issues the voting system certificate. A few things to note about the final disposition stage. Although a vendor is given the opportunity to submit an amended application within 60 days of notification of a test failure, BVSC cannot wait the entire 60 days due to the 120-day requirement under law to certify the voting system once the application is submitted. The final package must consist of the elements that were used in testing. New files submitted to the Bureau are not approved for the end user. Florida has a national reputation for our rigorous certification process. Vendors are very conscientious about not receiving a denial on their record. Because other states do look to what we do in Florida, if you were to get a bad result out of Florida, then other states will see that and be less likely to authorize that system for use in their state. On this slide, you can see the responsibilities of the vendor and the Bureau during the final disposition stage. Again, if the system is in non-compliance, the vendor may send BVSC a request for a written report stating the reasons for denial of certification and/or submit an amended application. The Bureau issues the final test report, a voting system certificate, if approved, a memo to the supervisors of elections, and if requested by the vendor, a report of denial, and that's in the case it was not approved. The final report is vetted by the Division of Elections Director, Maria Matthews, and myself. And once and if the certification is issued and the vendor letter is sent, the final report is published on the Division of Elections website. This is in keeping with our commitment to transparency in the elections process. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I thank you for your time, and I welcome Director Matthews to answer, and myself to answer any questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary. Thank you for an excellent presentation. One quick question, if I may. I think it would be in phase two, but whether it's in the phase one process testing or the phase two testing, would you please speak a little bit about what's done with regard to testing the security of the machines, as far as technological security of the machines?
Well, Maria, why don't I have you come up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Maria Matthews. With respect to the voting systems, all the vendors do a sort of pre-submission PINS testing, security testing that they do on their systems before they even submit to us. They also use Vistals for testing security, and those things are available to us as part of our test. We don't actually have the expertise in-house except for cyber navigators that we're able to use when they, as part of just reviewing the testing process. But we don't have the personnel right in the Bureau right now to do that.
Thank you. Let me ask this way. Mm-hmm. Are the machines air-gapped?
Air-gapped.
You're recognized?
Yes, for purposes of when they're on the, you mean at the polling locations and everything like that? Yes.
And if you would explain, what does it mean for a machine to be air-gapped?
Well, my understanding, hold on just a moment. Yeah. Because I'm not the technical expert, so I apologize for that.
That's okay. We brought
somebody else. Thank you. Hi, I'm Zane Wood, and I'm second in command at the Bureau of Voting System Certifications.
Mr. Wood, you're recognized for a response.
Thank you. When we meet an air gap, that means that there's no outside connection. There is a brief connection whenever they're uploading unofficial results to the election management system at the end of election night.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. During the actual election day, they're not in any connection to the outside world. There is a very brief connection whenever they're uploading election results or the unofficial election results at the end of election night.
Let me clarify that, because this is one of the misconceptions that we hear a lot, is that somehow they're connected to the internet. They are not. They are not connected to the internet. When they transmit the results from the precinct to the supervisor of elections office, it is they call it a zero tunnel, meaning a one-way connection between the machine and the supervisor's office. It is not connected to the internet.
All right. Thank you. Would you please file appearance form? So just what we have you for the record. Thank you so much, Mr. Wood as well. Members, questions? Representative Caruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Secretary, for your, well, I'm from the county of the Hanging Chads, so I appreciate the way that you have come on board, taken this head on, and build confidence and integrity into the system. you talked about equipment. You know, you're testing it and stress testing it, I guess. I go back to my first election. This is long before you were still serving in the House at the time. But we had a recount, and I'm wondering if the equipment being certified by the department is it capable of being concurrently able to handle multiple candidate recounts at the same time?
The answer is yes, and I was there in Palm Beach County in 2000. Spent 12 hours that day watching people vote. So been at this game a long time, and cut my teeth in Palm Beach County. So very familiar with the hanging Chad scenario. But the answer to your question is yes.
Okay, great. I know that because we were recounting four candidates at the time, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. We were recounting four candidates, me being one. The machines overheated. Some caught on fire. Some shredded ballots. It was a nightmare, but we got through it, and it all worked out. I did have a second question, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized for one follow-up this round, and then we'll come back to you after that.
Okay. With regards to the procedures manual for post-election certification voting systems audits, the manual states they're to randomly select a race that would be a candidate, and then randomly select at least 1%, but no more than 2% of the precincts. And I'm wondering, how does this sample size provide a statistically significant number for, you know, a certain level of confidence that you're looking for?
Sure. And I'll let Director Matthews take that one.
Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're referring to the procedures manual for the recount process.
Yes.
And that is based on state law. And so if the legislature chose to change that percentage, they could. But at this point, that is what it's stated in law.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Ms. Matthews.
Mr. Chairman, if I can add to your question, and hopefully we can, during our discussion today, can get into more detail. But
you're recognized.
Thank you. We have the capability now to do 100% audits of our elections. And I hope that we have 32 supervisors of elections that are now using the CLEAR audit system. I would like to see us use that in all 67 counties, because it gives us the ability to audit 100% of every election. And in fact, we have supervisor of elections early from Leon County here, and he actually put up all the ballots online so people could sit at home and look through all of the ballot images, and they can count till their heart's content. So we have that capability now. We certified that system earlier this year. So I wanted to mention that, because Director Matthews is correct that the legislature set those numbers, and if you're going to have a discussion about changing it, I think we could have a discussion about 100% audit of every single election in the state of Florida in all 67 counties.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cheney, for questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your presentation, Secretary. I met with some residents in my office this week, and they brought up four concerns, issues, questions, however you would coach them. One was voter roll hygiene, and I went to my supervisor of election in Pinellas County and discussed each of these concerns. She spent a good hour on the phone with me and walked through in detail how she addresses these issues. And I would say of the four areas I'll bring up, I'm confident that Pinellas County is doing a good job. There is one issue that she said they are working on. The other area, absentee ballot, chain of custody, and just really quickly, they have all man drop boxes. And if somebody were to walk up with, you know, a handful of ballots, because it could be your family members, you could maybe reasonably have six ballots or so. So they, you know, they would consider that reasonable. If somebody, on the other hand, walked up with a backpack full or a bag full or backed up a car, they would absolutely flag that and stop that. Regarding machine security, she walked me through all of the oval testing that's done and all the auditing that's done pre and post election. And if anybody wants to know more about that, please call me. Like I said, it was an hour phone call. It was very, very detailed. I'm not going to take the committee time here. But the one area that she said supervisors are working on, and I'm interested if you have any input, is verification of citizenship.
Thank you. Let's keep it to the scope of the presentation, but within the scope of the presentation, Secretary Byrd, you're recognized to provide a response.
So you mentioned voter roll hygiene first, and that is one of the major election reforms that this body did last session, which has had tremendous impact. I mean, it is our motto that clean rolls lead to cleaner elections. If you're waiting until the election is over to then start litigating, that's where the problem begins. We get it right on the front end. We have fewer problems on the back end. So that's why the legislature last year and under the governor's direction made reforms and tightened reforms to voter roll hygiene. With respect to non-citizens voting, that's a topic that could probably take up the entire rest of our time plus another committee meeting. So I'll be happy to reach out offline, or if you want another presentation on the non-citizen issue, we can give you that as well, because that's something we've taken a deep dive into, but it is beyond the scope and probably beyond the time of this committee.
Thank you, Secretary. Representative Beltran for questions.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Secretary, for your presentation. My first question is about, I think it's your first slide. You highlighted some text from Section 101-5605. And I'm looking at sub one, and it says that the Department of State, that is, shall examine the systems that are submitted to it. And then sub two says that any person owning or interested in the system can submit it to the Department of State. I looked through the statute. Perhaps I didn't do a full examination. I was looking for a provision that says that the Department of State has to approve these systems before they can be used. I didn't find that provision. That provision must be somewhere in the law, but if you can just address that for me, please.
Sure.
You're recognized.
Thank you. We have the election code. Do you have another question while Director Matthews is looking that up? Because it is in there that okay. The supervisors can't use a system until it's certified.
Representative Beltran, you're recognized for an alternate question while the Secretary reviews the code.
Thank you, Chairman, and I appreciate that. I'm sure it is in the election code. I just didn't see it on my initial examination. But I guess let me ask a different question. You described, I guess, what it sounded like was a tunnel system. I hope I got that correct. It sounds like you have the citation.
Yeah, so it begins in 101.292, 293, 294. So you will find it in those three sections.
Okay, thank you. I guess my second question was on this tunnel system. I guess it reports the unofficial results, I guess, from the voting place to the supervisor of elections office in each county. At some point, I assume that the machines are packed up and brought back to the office and there's an official count. Can you just explain what safeguard there is that they check the unofficial against the official and make sure that system, that signal has not been corrupted or altered, and that, you know, and that there's a chain of custody to make sure that the that there's nothing in that time or in that transmission that could have been tampered with, please?
Sure.
Secretary, you're recognized for a response.
Thank you. And as you noted, those first results are unofficial results. Those are not the final results because everything does come back. And during my time in the legislature, I ran the bill that said that the paper ballot is the best evidence of the voter's intent. So regardless of the machine count, under Florida law, the piece of paper that the voter marked is the best evidence. Should the election be called into question, should there be some concern of tampering, that the piece of the ballot, the paper, is the best evidence of the voter intent. It is not the machine count.
Secretary, if I may, with regard to the paper ballot, is it your opinion that the supervisors of elections have discretion on their own to count paper ballots
which would not take away the requirement to run them through a tabulator, but if they so wanted to count paper ballots, would they have that discretion to do so?
Under current law, they have, under certain circumstances of a recount, if it's under 0.25%, is that it? If it's on, so at 0.5%, or then 0.25%, then there is a provision for the under the recount statute for hand counting. Other than that, there is not. It is an electromechanical count under law.
Thank you for that response. My thought would be, if the law is silent on that issue, and they so wanted to exercise discretion, do you believe that they would have the discretion to do that, or would there need to be a statutory provision to give them that discretion?
They do not currently have that discretion under state law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Secretary, for the great presentation. I'll tell you, my initial question was going to be on the non-citizen registration. I hope we can get to that at some point. I recognize it's not very widespread. That being said, if I rob $100 from Chase Bank, I'm still going to go to jail for it. So if there's a loophole in there, I'd like that addressed at some point. So a quick question on your certification of your machines. Do they, and I'll have a follow-up if I could, Mr. Chair, does the public have the ability to observe the testing of these machines before certification?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. And I do want to mention, since this is the second person who's brought up the non-citizens, and I think it's really important for the members of the legislature to know and the public to hear this as well, that election law is a complex mix of federal and state law. There are things that I would like to do that I am unable to do because of federal law. So if people that are concerned about elections are not talking to their congressmen and women, if they're not talking to Senator Rubio and Senator Scott, then you are missing a big part of the fix that we probably agree that need to be made. But states' hands are tied. So specifically with respect to non-citizens, the federal government has plenary authority, meaning complete authority, over who is allowed into this country and who does and does not become a U.S. citizen. So until we get the federal government to partner with the states on that issue, we are very limited. So with that being said, on your question about the second part of your question was?
Does the public have the ability?
Yes, and the answer is yes, they do. Yes, that is part of the presentation, that the public can watch every single step of the way. I can tell you that having met with all 67 supervisors of elections, they all will walk anyone through the entire process. You know, the old how a bill becomes a law. They will walk you through how a ballot becomes a vote. And if you haven't availed yourself of that, I cannot strongly urge you enough to go spend the time with your supervisor of elections and have them walk you through the process, because I think you, when you leave, you will be much more confident in what we are doing and with the statutory changes we've made at the state level to ensure election integrity.
For a follow-up.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So in regard to our machines at the local level, number one, I recognize you say that they're not connected to the internet. That being said, can they still be susceptible to any sort of hacking? And what is our verification process to determine that those machines are air-gapped? Are we just taking the word for it from the counties, or do we verify that from the state level?
Thank you. Secretary, you're recognized for a response.
Thank you. And so, you know, one of the reasons we put up the kind of the definitions of things, because they're really important, and they're really important in the area of elections, because we hear this time and time again about things being hacked. Experts will tell you that if you give someone physical access to any machinery, it can be hacked. If you give them physical access, which means they can take them apart, tinker with them. But the machines themselves, on the issue of the air gapping, is that we verify that, correct? Yes, we verify that. And I would also point out that the 67 supervisors of elections are constitutional officers. They're elected and ultimately responsible to the constituents in their county who elected them. So I think that's another important part of this discussion is that these are the people that are elected by their constituents and ultimately responsible to them in an election if they were to fail in their duties.
Thank you. Representative Jacques, questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for indulging me and allowing me to come back to the committee, old stomping grounds. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for your presentation. I have a question regarding, the certification process is regarding voting systems, but in our elections, we have introduced some non-voting systems that are used in our elections. I just wanted to see what the process is there, if you're looking at those. For example, ballot tracks that can, you know, track someone's ballot. It's used by some SOEs, mail sorting technologies. Is there any process within the Division of Elections that certifies these non-voting systems as well that are used in our elections?
Secretary, you're recognized to respond to within the scope of the presentation as you wish.
Sure. Thank you, Representative Jacques. So, no, the answer to that question is only voting systems, so something that actually receives and tabulates a ballot, is something that's certified at the state level. The peripheries, which is what you're describing, the supervisors have the discretion to purchase those and as they see fit.
Thank you. For a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the clear audit system that you referenced earlier, is that a periphery or is that a voting system?
You're recognized.
Thank you. No, that is certified. We certified that earlier this year. So I thought I'd said that earlier, but if I didn't, then no, the clear audit system was certified by the Department of State and we put it through its paces.
Thank you. Representative Rizzo, any questions?
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Secretary, for the presentation. I'd like to go back to what certification means and perhaps what those standards are. Could you just kind of walk us through that and where those standards are coming from?
Yeah, I mean, so I think it's part of the
story. You're recognized. Oh,
thank you. I think it's part of the story going all the way back to 2000. And, you know, we've come a long way from being Florida to now being the best in the country in elections administration. Mm-hmm. And so even after 2000, there were some reforms made. The state went to, because in 2000, it was the Wild West. I mean, every county could use whatever system they wanted to use. So it was a mismatch, a hodgepodge. And after 2000, the state determined that it would be better to have consistency throughout the 67 counties. So then there was a period of time where we were using the touch screens, but there wasn't a piece of paper at the time. Am I correct, Maria, that we were using the touchscreen voting systems? Then there were issues with those. And so when did we begin system certification? Okay. All right. So they're telling me since the 1990s. But the thing that's been consistent is now that, I mean, essentially we have two approved vendors in the state. There's one other that's going through certification now. But that is one of the differences that distinguishes Florida from other states, is the fact that no system can be used that isn't certified by us according to the statutory requirements that the legislature has laid out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jacques, for another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Secretary, earlier was referenced that there may have been a lack of cyber experts, and correct me if I'm wrong, those are references to cyber navigators. So my question is, I mean, what kind of cyber security experts from the Department of State has fully inspected all lines of software source code in the voting system? To what extent is that being done, and who are these individuals who are doing those things, and how do they get qualified to work under your department and the division?
Take that, Maria.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Representative, we do examine the source code in our bureau. We do that. I apologize when I may have misspoken earlier in that we don't have a designated security person in the bureau, but we do have access to the cyber navigators who are able to help assist with that. But there are security tests that are done that we accept from VSTLs that are National Voting System Test Labs that will satisfy some of those requirements of security testing.
Thank you. Representative Caruso for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Secretary, is there a requirement with regards to the physical ballots that are manufactured or printed in a district or a county in this case, that includes a specific chain of custody, sign receipts for ballots being transferred from, say, the precinct manager to the actual supervisor's office, and then a reconciliation of all the ballots at the end to make sure that all the numbers add up. That, you know, if there were, I imagine there's ballots that were used to vote, there's ballots that were avoided and reissued, and then there's ballots that were not voted. And so is there some kind of requirement for a proper chain of custody and reconciliation with regards to that?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a minimum security procedures that every county has to have, and it's detailed very much in there about chain of custody, all their processes. There's also a lot of a ballot accounting that needs to be done every day after early voting or election day. There's accounting and reconciliation that's required in law for vote-by-mail ballots. So it takes into account all those ballots that you were talking about, that there's always this process of accounting, custody, and reconciliation of what goes out and what comes back and what's counted and what's not counted.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Quick follow-up. Would you be able to get me the reference, the source reference for that, what you're talking about?
Absolutely.
You're recognized.
Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
And I got to elaborate on that, Mr. Chairman. Because I try to put things, I mean, this is a technical area. I try to put it in lay terms. So, you know, we have book closing 29 days before an election. Book closing means that the electorate is set. No one can register to vote after 29 days before the election. So we know how many people are registered to vote in a given election. We then know how many ballots how many people show up to the polls. Then we know how many ballots were cast. And those three numbers can be reconciled to get a count. Now, where some of the confusion comes in, and some of the things that concerned citizens have brought to us, is that there is a difference, and this is something that we may want to consider cleaning up, and I'm not sure if it would require a rule change or a statutory change, but there are some of the reports that get made that make it appear as if more ballots were cast than people. But what happens is, if there's a four-page ballot, you'd be surprised at how many people go in and vote one race in an election. So those other three pages that the person turned in, but which are blank, the system identifies those, not counts them, identifies them as ballots. So it may look like if you had a four-page ballot, 100 people vote, it makes it look like you could have more people, more ballots cast than people who voted. But that's what I'm saying is that we're aware of that, and we want to look to clean up that discrepancy. But that may be one of the things that people have brought to you regarding the reconciliation, but it is not that more ballots are being cast than there are people voting or registered to vote in a given precinct.
Thank you so much. Representative Gant, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Burt, on page 10 of your presentation, the first bullet, it references noncompliance, and I know you said that you all try to pretty much break the machine. Is there a list of criteria that would qualify as noncompliance? And if so, what is the list? Or could you provide that?
So
you're recognized.
Thanks. The answer is yes, but let me see if we want to add some the list that we can standard. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
You're recognized for a response.
Those are in our standards. We'll be happy to shoot you the email or the link to that. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have a follow-up, Mr. Chair, if I may.
Go ahead for follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when it's considered non-compliant, I know you said that there was a 120-day or 60-day. Can you just explain that for me? I know you had mentioned it, but I wasn't really clear about the time frame with 120 days and 60 days.
You're recognized for a response.
And I'll let Director Matthews handle that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So under law, once an application is considered complete for purposes of initiating testing, We have a maximum of 120 days to put it through its paces and do all the testing. And at some point, if there has to be an amended report or amended application, it starts that clock over. But we're giving a certain amount of time for the vendor to be able to make whatever changes that they may need to do, if it's something that can be, you know, addressed.
Thank you so much. Representative Tremont.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One last question. Do the Albert sensors that are connected to all the 67 counties that provide security alerts go through a certification process as well?
You're recognized if you know.
Thank you. I want to say yes, because the Albert sensors are, I believe, set up by the under the NIST standards, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Yes, so those are under the, because that is Albert sensors are used nationwide for critical infrastructure, which elections are considered. And actually, in the governor's recommended budget, we are requesting money for all 67 counties to be using the Albert sensor. So we're not all 67 are not currently using it. We think it is a best practice for all 67 to be doing it, so that the bad actors are blocked.
Thank you. Representative Beltran for one last question.
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Secretary, you a moment ago you were talking about an undervote scenario where someone, I guess, just votes one page of the four pages. And forgive me for this question. It's been, I think, over a decade since I've voted in person. I'm usually busy, you know, doing something on Election Day, at least, you know, last 5 years. But so I guess my question is, when I think what happens is you fill out your ballot when you go and let's say you're in person. You go and you fill out your ballot, and then you go and you put it through the scanner, and the scanner scans your ballot, and then you go on your way. Couldn't we design a system that, you know, you, when you go to scan your ballot, it will, you know, give you a red light or something and say, you know, alert the voter that they've done an undervote. At least for, it wouldn't address the vote by mail, but at least in person, have some sort of feedback to the voter that, you know, you should go back in the booth and finish filling out your ballot. Is that technologically feasible? Is there a reason we don't have that? Or am I totally off base in how it works? Thank you.
Secretary Byrd, to the extent that that's beyond the scope of the presentation, as you wish to respond.
No, I can answer. So we do have the ADA compliant machines, which will let you know that you have undervoted or overvoted. So those machines alert the voter while they're using them, and those are the Americans with Disability Act compliant machines. With the others, I'm being told that if you vote the entire ballot, when you undervote the entire ballot, it will tell you. So if there's no mark on the ballot at all, it will tell you you need to go back and look at this. But if there's one mark, you would be surprised how many people go in and get a ballot and don't vote it at all because they want to keep their register. I mean, it's when you really dig into this, the amount of anomalies and strange things that we see that voters do, it's pretty interesting. But you know, whether the technology exists to do that, I'm not sure, but it happens quite a bit. A lot of people go in and vote for president or governor and skip the rest of the ballot, which then creates the issue of having extra pages, but there's a solution for that anomaly.
Thank you. Representative Jacques, I think this is our last question before we go to comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Secretary, as you're aware, I filed a bill that would ban foreign-made machines and software in our elections. And thank you for coming by my office earlier this week to discuss. One of the things that you mentioned earlier regarding hacking, you mentioned that anyone who has physical control of the machine can potentially hack. And my reading of that and my understanding, if somebody's a manufacturer of a machine or a developer, would have physical control prior to it coming online and coming to you and your department. So my question is, given that there is physical control and say, hypothetically, a foreign country is making this, maybe an adversary, is it possible where there could be certain things placed in these machines and software that can make it more susceptible to hacking? And what is your department doing to maybe catch that before any of that occurs once that physical control is then transferred over to you in the department?
So Secretary, you're going to be, I'm going to recognize you for a response indicating that we're not here to talk about a specific bill. We're not debating a bill. We're not presenting a bill today. This is your presentation on the certification process. But with that being said, I recognize you to respond to the extent that you're able to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for taking the time to meet with myself and my staff the other day. And I was able to get some of your questions answered regarding both the physical hardware of the machines and the software. So with one of the vendors, they're 100% the software is coded in the United States. Another one has coders in the United States and Toronto, Canada. With respect to the components of the machine, so the machines themselves are assembled in the United States. So all the vendors assemble them in the United States. But we have a global supply chain. That is no different from our cell phones, from our computers, to things that you know, our military uses. You know, more than 60% of silicon chips and semiconductors are made in Taiwan. 90% of the critical chips and semiconductors are made in Taiwan. As I've gone on trade missions with the governor twice this year around the world and visiting friendly countries, everyone recognizes the problem of the global supply chain issue. I would like nothing better than for, you know, more as many things as possible, whether it's voting systems or anything else, to be made in the United States by American workers. But currently, there just does not exist the ability to make some of these components or source them in the United States. You know, but once again, while the components are assembled, are made somewhere else, they're assembled in the United States, and then they are put through their paces by, you know, the software is tested by us before it's sent out to the supervisors, and then they are conducting their own, you know, testing and certification, and that's the logic and accuracy testing, which you're familiar with, that happens both pre-election, post-election. So we have people at the state looking at this, and then your 67 supervisors of elections are watching this as well to look for anomalies. But I would go back to my statement earlier that ultimately it is the ballot, the piece of paper, that is the best evidence. So if we have the worst case scenario, which we haven't had, thank God, in a very long time in Florida, if we had that worst case scenario, ultimately it would be the piece of paper that would be the best evidence of the voter's intent and not a machine count.
Thank you so much. Okay, we're going to move on to public testimony. We have Mr. Marin, Mr. Lou Marin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. So it's an honor to be here today. I'm excited to hear all these changes that are being made. I think it's great that we're making changes, making progress to secure our vote. The issue that I'm concerned about, if you go back to the first slide, the law itself, where it says the Department of State shall. Can you turn that back?
No, sir. Okay. You have 3 minutes to make your comment.
Thank you very much. Well, I appreciate it. Well, when I look at the standards, the voting standards that are regulated or the protocols that are set to make sure that all these changes that were being made, we haven't done that yet. If anything, what's concerning is that we're basing off 2005 protocols. That's 19 years old, okay? Think about that. 19 years ago, the number one cell phones out there were flip phones. They weren't iPhones. Well, my point is that technology has changed so much that we can download lots of data over the internet. Back in the day, you couldn't do that. My point is that we need to update this to make sure all these changes are in compliance with current technology. Right now, the protocols are not. In other words, we have a security issues of what I call Swiss cheese. So my issue that I'd like to see done is maybe rewrite these things so that also to make sure that all these changes are being made comply with current technology. Also, as I said earlier, that I did offer earlier to bring in a professional who is an expert in who holds credentials, really to answer all these security issues. That's Clay Priest from Georgia was willing to come down here, and he's always available to the committee to ask questions on this issue of cybersecurity and how to secure our elections. That's all I would offer. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Next, we have Mr. Christopher Jersak. Come on down.
Thank you for having this hearing. All I wanted to add to the point of ASLO's cybersecurity is physical security. Again, to the point that the 2005 standards, when you had those standards back then, usually the largest disk that we had, a little USB stick back then, was 256 megabytes. You couldn't really do much unless you secured the machines. There really wasn't much you could hack back then. But with today's standards, you could literally change an OS over the air with the modern devices we have. The modern modems and everything else can move a lot of data and make a lot of changes in a short amount of time. So please consider that the newer standards of technology, these machines are nowhere close to being able to fit. I mean, back in 2005, we were the gold standard. And because we came out of the hanging Chad moment, it was actually, we led the country to basically show how basically this should be done. And I think this is the moment now that Florida can step up and lead the country again to show them that we can also make sure, ensure bringing back integrity and trust back to our election systems. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next, we have Mr. Mark Nguyen. Would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Mark Nguyen.
Sir, you're recognized for a brief comment.
I am here as an experienced person in technology. I have a degree in computer science with a minor in mathematics. I work for a NOAA lab in Princeton, New Jersey. I ran a technical lead team on a supercomputing system of over 5,000 processors on the floor. I understand how computers are made. I understand how the chips work. I work detailed level with Intel representatives to try and fix problems on our processors. And I want to address specifically the air gap problem that was mentioned here. As you know, the Israeli government attacked the Iranian nuclear material processing with an air gap. They had nothing but an air gap. But they destroyed their ability to make nuclear material. They destroyed their centrifuges with an air gap. Second of all, Covenant Trucking was just fined over $600,000 for not hiring non-American workers. Now, I appreciate that you have American companies making these machines. I'm sorry.
I'm going to ask that you address the members of the committee, not the secretary.
I apologize for that. Yes, and so they're hiring non-American workers at our companies, and they're forced to by the Department of Justice. In fact, Elon Musk has been sued by the Department of Justice to hire non-American workers at a technical level. Now, in a compiler, in a system like an election machine, you have microcode running on the processors that can be changed. You have machine code that can be changed. The machine code is generated by a compiler from source code. So you've got a compiler, source code, machine code. That compiler generates what's called a preamble. A preamble can contain just about anything you want in there. Once you process the software, it starts running on the machine. Now, since it has a communication chip on it, anybody who's a rogue actor can communicate through there to get to rogue software. I'm not saying that this is what exists. I'm just telling you what's possible. This can happen. It has happened in national governments, the Iranian government specifically. And with that, I conclude my testimony.
Thank you so much. Next, we have Raj Dormasi, representing Defend Florida. Come on down.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for allowing public comment. Thank you to the Secretary of State. Let me start by saying I'm very grateful to be in Florida and not one of those states that the Secretary correctly referred to earlier, so I'm very appreciative of that. My comments are as follows. Acknowledging the heavy burden of work, increasingly difficult for our supervisors of elections community, Secretary of State, and an ever-changing ecosystem for elections, I do want to put the following comments. The first question I have is the Secretary of State and the Department satisfied that the peripheral systems that were commented on earlier are not being certified? Understanding that a lot of our election reform that has been built over time out of this House has strengthened significantly our election process when it comes to mailing in person and same day voting. Regrettably, the mail-in process, it strengthened the process for mailing in person and same day voting. When it comes to the ever increasing volume of votes placed on via the mail, these peripheral devices mentioned earlier, the e-poll books, the mail sorting, the ballot tracks, is the fact that they're not certified allowed and tolerable by the Secretary of State? Or should something be done to bring those peripheral devices under state regulation, oversight, and reporting? Because none of those things are being done by the private companies that provide those critical services. Further, those critical services and those devices are networked within the precinct to the pieces of equipment that are certified. So that allows for potential contamination. This idea of contamination is widely accepted in every other industry, from commercial to fiduciary to medical to insurance. It is not being recognized in the election industry, if I could use that term. So we would urge for higher rigor in that regard. We would also like to please underscore the certification of the testers. So we appreciate and are grateful that there is certification and inspection being done, but we ask for disclosure on the qualifications so that those testers meet the existing standards already present in all of those industries. It is our estimation that we are 15 years behind those industries, especially when it comes to the processing of mail-in ballots that uses this equipment. I also would like to call to attention that there are certain basic practices within our electronics infrastructure within the precinct, such as the use of USB drives, that are now not permitted in the industries I just mentioned. So I'm calling for the raising of the watermark for those specific areas. Thank you very much for your time. I am very appreciative, sir.
Sir, thank you so much. And you are exactly at 3 minutes. I appreciate your absolute timeliness. Thank you so much. Next, we have Mr. Nutt. Come on down. You're recognized for your public comment. Name for the record, please.
Yes, sir. Richard Nutt. And Chairman Fabricio, thank you for letting us speak today. I appreciate this opportunity. As a systems engineer for a defense contractor, it is my job to ensure that technical requirements meet operational needs. Programmatic bases, such as acquisition intelligence and lifecycle management, are covered, and testing and evaluation is sufficient. That is a core part of my job. I've also served as a poll worker. So I've experienced in this both from as a DOD systems engineer, and I've seen the election system from the inside out. Based on my observations, I am very concerned about our election systems. I would like to know how our certification processes compare to the Department of Defense and other corporate practices. Some of my concerns are the lack of cybersecurity testing performed by the state, the use of thumb drives. This is not allowed by the Department of Defense and many corporations because of its vulnerabilities. Vulnerabilities in data transmission. The incorporation of non-certified systems, which gives me serious concerns about the concept of cyber boundaries. That is something we take very seriously in my work in command and control systems in the military. Another one that is overlooked is supply chain security. When I talk about programmatic processes, acquisition intelligence and supply chain management is critical in that lifecycle management. We have to analyze that through a program protection plan. I would like to see that, actually. I believe many citizens share these concerns. They should be addressed to restore voter confidence, which is decreasing right now. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Next, we have Kathleen Griffith Zhang. Come on down.
Representative Fabricio, thank you again for public comments. We really do appreciate that.
Please state your name for the record.
Kathleen Griffith Zhang.
You're recognized for comment.
Thank you. I'm the owner of a IT staffing firm that caters exclusively to the financial services community. And what I've seen over the last 15 years is their staffing changes have occurred based on the changes that have occurred in technology. So They are hiring people that have certain cybersecurity certifications, which I won't go into that detail, but I can provide you a list. And the other thing they hire are individuals that are developing software for certain standards. So I think Representative Tremont was trying to get to that question, what are the standards? You can say you have standards, you can say you have certifications, that's good. But what are the standards underlying that certification? What happens in the commercial world is they voluntarily have accepted standards from the National Institute of Standards and Technology. It's called NIST. It's a government agency, but the banking industry and many other commercial establishments have voluntarily accepted these standards. And it's considered a competitive advantage. It's considered your reputation is at stake if you don't show what your standards are in detail. So, for instance, NIST has a cybersecurity framework, CSF 2.0, just updated in August of 2023, right? Then there's the Information Systems Audit and Control Associations, ISACA. That would be COBIT IT. That's an IT governance framework. This is the type of standards I'm looking for in my election systems. Another one, ITAF from ISACA, fourth generation. So these are constantly updated. And this is the what you would want to request to your vendors. What I believe is happening is the vendors are driving the contracts. How much time do I have left? And what you would like to do is the
45
client.
Seconds.
So the client should be driving the process. In the commercial world, because of competition, I'm not going to be able to sell a ballot tracking system to, let's just, you know, to a bank, even though it's not the right, I'm trying to give you the, if I don't have all these standards in place, because why would the bank buy that money counting machine, right, if I wasn't completely sure that the vendor was keeping up with all these standards? So they are constantly upgraded and changed. There's another one that if you have proprietary software, but there's a major release, that's called a SOC Type 2 report. It's from the AICPA, that's the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. And these are the things that you ask. And lastly, we have your own created organization called Cyber Florida, based at USF, taxpayer funded. All the big corporations in the Tampa Bay area and across the state come to their symposiums.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mrs. Rita Medeiros. Come on down.
Thank you very much. I just have three.
And ma'am, you are representing Foundation for Freedom, is that right?
Yes.
Go ahead, you're recognized.
Okay, I just want to say three things. On the Albert sensor, I didn't hear that it was actually NIST tested. I thought so. So that's one thing I want to put out there. The second is it certified before and also after it's put onto the machine? Is it certified as a whole piece? I used to do testing and certification with the equipment, and we would have to do the individual, get a certification from the manufacturer, and then put it together as a system and do certification. Also, when you do NIST testing, who is writing that script? Is the company that you hired for the testing, or is it the company that manufactured the equipment? Also, the Albert sensors, from what I understand, they don't block cyber attacks. They only send suspicious information. So those are the three. Those are the few things that I had.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Mr. Mark Early, the Leon County Voters and Florida Supervisors of Election.
Mr. Chair, thanks for the opportunity to speak. First, I'd like to introduce myself. I've been in the technocrat of elections for 37 years, a little over 30 years at the county level here. I'm now the supervisor. Before that, I was the voting systems custodian and manager, and also with a vendor supporting elections all over the country for 6.5 years after the 2000 elections. I would like to compliment the Secretary's presentation and really rise in support of that. I've seen systems deployed all over the country. I've been part of, I believe it's 6 different certification efforts, either in, as an assist or leading the certification efforts. Florida has a very demanding certification process, and it's built on top of the federal certification process at the EAC, the Elections Assistant Commission. The EAC does operate under not only the NIST standards, but they are informed from NIST, but also election experts throughout the nation. And so these are very rigorous standards that are implemented. And I don't know of any system that's in use in Florida currently that has not already been passed by the VISTLs and the EAC. So it's a complementary certification process. I've heard concerns about USB drives. USB drives are only used in a one-way direction. When they're inserted in a machine, they are sealed and not touched by any poll workers. And we have chain of custody for that, as well as for all the paper ballots, very rigorous chain of custody. So I hear a lot of questions and concerns, but frankly, these are concerns and questions that we as supervisors of elections and the technical support for those offices have anticipated for years. And I think the fixes are to assure that those are being met are covered in statute and in rule. The certification standards, I think, were last updated at the rule level in 2005, but in some ways, those are generalized standards. The threats that are evolving over time since then that those standards still have to ensure are adequate to protect the systems, the various levels of testing do evolve a bit, depending on what the latest concerns are about that. I could, you know, go on and answer questions, but I know that's not my job here today. But from our supervisors, I'm the past president of our association, we are very confident of the security of our system. It's incumbent upon us to make sure that our systems are secure. We have great audit procedures and paper ballots and chain of custody to make sure that all of that is on the up and up. And when our elections are closest, we do the recounts. So we're very confident.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Seeing no more comment cards, that's going to close the comments section of our meeting here today. I want to thank the Secretary Byrd for joining us today, as well as members of the public for sharing their thoughts with us. Seeing no more business before the committee. Before I close, I'll say this. I don't anticipate that we're going to have another hearing this calendar year. So I'm going to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah. And I expect that we're going to have a robust session going forward next year where we'll see you all again. Representative Tremont moves that we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.